Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Iti Asesha Samamnaya. Purano Upanishad Rasa. Samudrita Purvajata. Yoma Yagna Mahatmabi. Iti. Thus. Ashesha.
Of all.
Samamnaya.
Samamnaya.
The Vedas. Purana. The Puranas. Upanishad. Comprising the confidential mystery. Rasa. The nectar. Samudrita. Distilled. Purva. In the distant past. Jataya. By those who were born. Vyoma. In the higher regions of the universe. Yanai. Who travel. Mahatmabhi.
Saintly persons.
Here is the translation. Please listen. Thus the ancient saints who travel in the upper heavens distilled this nectarian and confidential essence of all the Vedas and Puranas. Please repeat. Thus the ancient saints, who travel in the upper heavens,
distilled this nectarian
and confidential essence of all the Vedas and Puranas. There's no purport, so I'll read the next verse. Tvam chaitad brahmadayada shradayat manu sashanam daryam darayam charagam kamam kamanam barjanam rinam. As you wander the earth at will, my dear son of Brahma, you should faithfully meditate on these instructions concerning the science of the self, which burns up the material desires of all men. Here's the purport. Narada, the son of Brahma, heard this account from Sri Narayan Rishi. The epithet Brahmadayada also means that Narada attained Brahman effortlessly, just as if it were his inherited birthright. Very short purport there. We'll read the next verse. Sukadeva Goswami said, when Sri Narayan Rishi ordered him in this way, the self-possessed sage Narada, whose vow is as heroic as a warrior's, he accepted the command with firm faith. What was the command? My dear son of Brahma, this was in the previous verse, talking to Narada Muni, you should faithfully meditate on these instructions concerning the science of the self, which burn up the material desires of all men, You should meditate upon what you have heard. What does meditate mean? Basically, in what sense is he using the term meditate? Contemplate, think deeply about. So he has heard it, these instructions. Which instructions? The title is the Prayers of the Personified Vedas, in which in 28 verses, the different Upanishads, which are of very esoteric, secret aspects of the Vedas. They they describe their essence. What is the sar? What is the purport? What is the heart of the matter? And then the conclusion of all the Upanishads was given in the last verse, that ultimately the Upanishads are meant to reveal you, the Supreme Person. You, the Supreme Person. So even though it is difficult to discern the conclusion of such a vast, lengthy, and deeply philosophical scripture, they give the essence, the conclusion, and that is that the Supreme Lord is a person. That is the supreme knowledge. Vedes cha savar aham, Krishna says, I am to be known. This is the supreme knowledge, to know Krishna, the Supreme Person. There are so many different levels of knowledge. And according to the depth of the knowledge, or the height of the knowledge, depending upon what type of metaphor one uses, that knowledge is useful according to how deep and penetrating it is. Using the knowledge that an atomic physicist may possess, he could unleash so much power from atoms. Very powerful. So much power is there. But that power can be used in a destructive way, or something so wonderful. Depending upon the type and the subtlety and the depth of one's knowledge, one can do amazing things. And the Upanishads describe, in a somewhat indirect way, the most amazing knowledge that the unlimited Absolute Truth, who has no boundaries, he is unlimited in all his unlimited aspects, but yet, he is a person. You, he says. It is you, ultimately, O Lord, who the Upanishads reveal. This knowledge is the topmost knowledge. Rather, this knowledge is an aspect, a part of the topmost knowledge. Unless we have this knowledge, we cannot put together the process of attaining that Supreme Person. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, quoting from Naya Sutra, that there are four aspects of transcendental knowledge that everyone must know very deeply if one wants to attain the Absolute Truth. And the first is who we are, knowledge of the self. Deeply understand that, not on the surface. Because one time I was, not many years ago, according to the time frame of Lord Brahma, but a few years ago, it was about almost 35 years ago, where were you then? And you, where were you two then? You don't know, do you? Huh? He was what? Where were you then? You're laughing at him. At least we know you were an atom at Krishna's lotus feet. Serving. So, I asked this one, I was in Korea. And this American serviceman, army man, came over to me and said, I don't need to join anything like this. I know who I am. And I said, well, who are you? And he said, I'm me. That is a certain level. I mean, because it would be more confusing if he said, I'm you. At least he knew he wasn't. So he had some level of knowledge, but it wasn't very, very deep about who he is. Identifying with the body generally, or the mind. He meant I'm secure in my concept of myself in my mind and body. But then above that knowledge is knowledge that we are actually eternal. But yet above that knowledge is I'm eternally Krishna's. Eternally Krishna's servant. That is the depth of knowledge about the self. And all other knowledge about the self is incomplete and unsatisfying. Because we must know ourselves in relationship. In relationship. In relationship to our family, to our country, to our business, to this, that. But we're always in relationship. But those relationships are temporary. While our relationship with Krishna is who we actually are forever. It's unavoidable. We cannot break it. The closest we can come from breaking our eternal relationship with Krishna as servant is losing our identity completely for some time and considering ourselves one. Losing our sense of self. Merging. And that for the devotees, kaivalya narakayate, it is like hell. Like hell. Suffering, torture, because there is no nectar of Krishna's service to drink. And the devotees, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and so many other devotees, their conception of happiness is so deeply realized in their identity as servant of Krishna that they will say, I just want to serve Krishna and I don't care about anything else. I can take my birth here. I can take my birth there. I can take myself, my birth as even a bug, an insect. Would you like to be an insect? No. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I don't care as long as I take my birth in the house of a devotee, even as an insect. Why can he make such a radical statement? Because he's thinking that in a devotee's house I will hear the glories of Krishna spoken purely. And if I can just hear the glories of Krishna spoken purely, and I am receptive to those glories, then I will be experiencing my relationship with Krishna. And that is the potency of hearing about Krishna properly, that one can actually experience one's relationship with Krishna. So the externals, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, don't care at all. I just want to always keep myself in relationship with Krishna as his servant and hearing about him. Then I don't care where I am. So knowing deeply who we are means who we are in relationship with Krishna. And then secondarily, Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes from Amnaya Sutra, and Amnaya is in this verse too, it means Vedic. Just sit properly, like this. Either grow up very quickly, or you have to be very quiet, or be with your mother. Okay? Fold your hands, you two, properly. Very, very good. Who's sitting straighter? Who's sitting up straight and tall? Yes, very nice, very nice. And all the other men standing like this and fold their hands. I was a teacher for so many years, so I know this tattva. Very good sitting, very good sitting. Very good. Very good. Sitting so nicely. Who else is sitting nicely? Yes, very good. Very good, yeah. Very good. Okay. So, the second one is knowing Krishna. deeply, not just on the surface from a distance. Just like we may know, we may look at a city from a distance and it looks very cloudy. But if we're in close to the city, we see inside there are people, there are houses, they're doing this and they're doing that. You're still sitting so nicely. Very good. I'm not so sure about you. So knowledge about Krishna means ultimately, what is that ultimate knowledge about the unlimited Supreme Lord? Consider that. Think about that. What is the ultimate knowledge of someone who is unlimited? There is no ultimate knowledge in one sense. And even as the verse we read yesterday said, he cannot even know himself. But in Vrindavan, in Braja, this ultimate abode of Krishna, Vrindavan is so much the ultimate abode of Krishna that Krishna cannot experience himself fully in other places. His full nature is not fully exhibited in any other place. Even though he is still he, the supreme unlimited personality of Godhead. But unless he is in Vrindavan, he cannot act in the way that is most satisfying to him. Even if he's with his most beloved devotees, the Brajavasis and the Brajagopis. This is shown in Kurukshetra. And Mahaprabhu describes the ecstasy of being with Krishna. The Brijbashis are with Krishna, but not in Vrindavan. They're in Kurukshetra. And they're just thinking, oh, Krishna, you are so wonderful. But here, you are a king, and there are chariots, and there are so many soldiers. And we cannot actually experience the sweetness of your full nature here, even though you are the same Krishna, and we are the same, the gopis are speaking, we are the same gopis, but we cannot experience your full nature. Actually, Srimati Radharani is saying this. So please come back to Vrindavan. Please. And that is the Rath Yatra festival. The taking of Krishna back to Vrindavan by the Brijbasis so that they could be with Krishna with his peacock feather and playing the flute, because Krishna doesn't take those out of Vrindavan. So Krishna in his most fully relaxed, so to speak, in most intimate nature, where he expresses the most intimate kind of love with his most intimate devotees, is Vrindavan. And it can't be expressed anywhere else. So this... And then you take that to the furthest degree. And this is actually described by... in two places. One... In the Bhagavatam, in a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, to a verse beginning Naparye Ham, when the Braja Gopis express completely the depth of their love for Krishna, the most deep and intimate love for Krishna, how does Krishna react to that? Because different, if one approaches Krishna with some material desire, kama sava kamava moksha kama daradi, tibrena bhakti yogena, yajeta purusha para, Krishna will satisfy that desire for his devotee. And if one approaches Krishna and asks for liberation, he will satisfy that. When I first began chanting, the kind devotee who taught me about Krishna consciousness, Rupanuga Prabhu, he told me, one day, if you chant Krishna's names, the Hare Krishna mantra, one day Krishna will come to you. He will appear before you and say, I am like this.
He always used to make this. I am like this. And then he said, and then he'll say, what do you want? What can I do for you? You've been chanting my names. What can I do for you? And then Rupa Nuga Prabhu would say, don't ask him for anything. He said, I am not a baniya. That's what he used to say. But he said, I'm not a merchant. I have not served you to get anything from you. I'm serving you because on the most lowest of the level, because I am your servant. That lowest of level is the highest of level. But on that level, I'm a servant. I don't want anything from you. This is my natural position to serve you. This is what Prahlad Maharaj said. Same thing. He said, oh Lord, Srinidev said, I'll give you what benediction do you want? He said, no. Don't compromise my relationship with you. I am your servant. This is my natural position. This is what makes me feel like me. I am your servant. I don't want anything. It is not business. I am your servant. And that's how Prabhupada translated the Hare Krishna mantra. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. Please accept me, Prabhupada also translated. Please accept me as yours. And Srila Jiva Goswami comments, not on this, but he explains this mood of sharanagati, of surrender, returning to our surrendered position, our natural surrendered position of being Krishna's servant. This has the benefit, if we are fixed in that position, actually surrendered, this gives us a feeling of belonging to Krishna. And this feeling of belonging to Krishna is, the lack of this feeling of belonging to Krishna is what makes everyone in this world very, ultimately, very lonely. Because we don't really feel like we belong. So we try to, you see this, that, you know, everywhere. Everyone is looking to belong to something, a family, the country feeling, the something, or you find some football team or something to root for, that you feel like you belong like that, that, or even a company. And they really, and then I saw this with, you know, you belong to a company, you join that good company and belong, and then they sell your division. And it's quite disturbing. Because that feeling of artificial feeling of belonging to something that we try to establish, to give meaning, to give purpose, to give identity to us, it's artificial when we establish it with something temporary because it's not actually us, because we are actually eternal. And we have an eternal relationship with Krishna and we'll want to belong to everything except belonging to Krishna. And that, returning to belonging to Krishna, Krishna, I am yours. Tava smiti chayachate, Lord Ramachandra says, if one, sakrideva papanam yas, if one time surrenders to me, and says, tava smiti, pray sincerely, I am yours, tava smiti, I am yours. Abhayam sarvada tasmai, for such a person, I give him fearlessness in every place, sarvada. Dadam yetad vratam mama, this Krishna says is my vow, vrata, mama vrata. I give him this, and this is my vow. The sense, go tripte varanam tatsa, I give myself to Krishna, and Krishna, I belong to Krishna now. This is where bhakti begins. when we actually fully give ourselves to Krishna. So that's the third actual principle of knowledge. The first is who I am, the second is who Krishna is, and the third is the process of awakening our relationship with Krishna, which is our loving, serving mood, and that process is bhakti, which means turning to Krishna from bahyamukh to samukh, turning towards Krishna and belonging to Him again, accepting our position as His servant. And the fourth part of knowledge, according to Amnaya Sutra, quoted by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is knowing the difference of what to do and what not to do. Discriminating, the ability to discriminate what is favorable, what is unfavorable for our advancement. You're still sitting so nicely, both of you. How nice. Very nice. Quietly and peacefully and sitting so nice. Thank you. So the Upanishads, the entirety of the Upanishads, when examined deeply and their essence is presented, this is what it presents. That you are a person and we are meant to serve you. So these verses say, after Narada Muni has heard this, you faithfully meditate upon these instructions concerning the science of the self, which burn up the material desires of all men. If one meditates on these instructions and deeply understands who one is in relationship to Krishna, and deeply enters into that relationship, not that we don't have material desires, but they will quickly or gradually be burned into ashes. They will not. What is the benefit of, if you think of it as a seed, a material desire as a seed, what is the benefit or the drawback of burning a seed? What is the result of burning a seed?
It can't sprout.
So the material desires, when they get burnt and turned to ashes, they cannot sprout and give us. Why don't we want our material desires to sprout like seeds? Because what is this? If you grow a material desire, and then it will give its fruit, and then it will give more seeds. And what is the problem of having more seeds of more material desires? The problem is that you have to take a birth again, and another birth, and another birth, and another birth, and another birth, to satisfy the material desires that actually don't bring us the happiness that we're longing for, that we're hoping that the fulfillment of these material desires will give us. We're hoping that if I finally get this desire fulfilled, or finally get that desire, and finally, so desires have, there's the negative desires and the positive desires. The positive desires is I want, and the negative desires is I don't want. So icha dvesha sarutena dvandva mohena bharata. That these engage us. I want and I don't want. The icha and the dvesha. Aversion and attraction. Attraction and aversion. They keep us busy our whole life. And then the whole next life, and the whole next life, bewildering us to think that finally, at some point, I'm going to get that thing that is going to bring the satisfaction that I so deeply long for and don't have. So this knowledge begins with understanding that no, because you are an eternal soul, you can put so many material things in the hole in your heart, a hole in your consciousness, and it will not touch it, it will not fill it. Rather, one should develop one's loving relationship with Krishna. Very simple. Very simple. Very simple to understand, but difficult to do. Why is it difficult to do?
Because Jiva Goswami, he describes this in his comments in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. Why Bhava Bhakti is so dualava? What does so dualava mean? Rarely achieved. Why is it rarely achieved? And this completes the point in one sense that I was making before and didn't actually get to, that when Krishna was dealing with the gopis and he actually saw that he got them in the 31st chapter of the 10th canto, the song of the gopis, the Gopi Gita, Krishna actually, in his clever way, he disappears from the rest. They come out in the middle of the night. He plays their flute, his flute. Krishna plays his flute. And he practically, with his flute sound, the sound of his flute, he captures the gopis' minds and hearts, and they're forced to come out and break all principles. They leave their family, they drop their children. No offense. They stop feeding them, they stop cooking, and their relatives are saying, "You can't go out, you can't go out," and they don't even hear them. They're being pulled out by Krishna in the middle, not the middle of the night, but just at the time when the sun is setting and the moon, the full moon is rising, because on the full moon night, the exact time that the sun sets is the time when the full moon rises. Did you know that? Yeah. So they come out there in the forest, the dangerous forest where there are tigers and other wild creatures and snakes, and they come out in the middle of the night being pulled by Krishna, and Krishna's enchanting them. And then he said, "Oh," Krishna says to him, "it's so nice that you're here. Why have you come again?" "Oh, you've come to see the beauty of the forest. Okay. Now that you've seen it, you should go home." And they're going, and then finally they start to enjoy a little bit, and then Krishna disappears. And then the gopis go mad. And in their madness, because they're very shy, they're the most dharmic, religious, and actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described somewhere that earlier he says he reveals Krishna's mind, and he says these gopis are so dharmic. It is like a river flowing in a very deep riverbed. They cannot go beyond their dharma. How am I going to get them to become most ecstatic in their relationship with me? Because the riverbed is so of their dharma, of their religiosity, of their morality, of their obedience, is so deep that I can't make it overflow. So he began to think, and he thought, I know how to do it. I'll play my flute. And using Krishna, this will make them so mad in ecstasy, so make their love for me, it will flood that river, and they'll go into the stages of Mahabhav. And in that way, by the exchange of love on the highest level, then the enjoyment will be the supreme. So Krishna began to play his flute on that night in the setting of Vrindavan, in the setting of the full moon night of Vrindavan. And the gopis came running out again. Then he tells them to go home. He starts preaching to them about how the most important duty of a
of a wife is to serve her husband and take care of the young children. And Prabhupada very carefully says, don't minimize these instructions in the Krishna book. And then he disappears from them. He plays with them just like they're like karputli. Karputli means puppets. Bangala putulnach. And then when they go completely mad in separation, then they do many things, but they reveal their hearts, because when one's heart is very, very deep, one just doesn't talk about it very easily. Talk about one's love or this. Write a song and send it to everyone. No, once one, it's very, very, things that are very, very deep or very, very private. And for this reason, Sukadeva Goswami doesn't even, aside from Anayor Aradito Nunam Bhagavan Hari Ishwara, aside from one verse, he doesn't in Bhagavatam mention the name of Srimati Radharani, because things that are very deep are not just thrown around. The deepest, most confidential parts of one's heart. So the gopis at that time, in their madness of love, they start speaking about Krishna, and it is only, they're only speaking about their love for Krishna, and they don't care about themselves. They're only concerned for Him. Their love is so deep, it is spotlessly pure. There is not the slightest tinge of any tinge of selfishness. It is just love for Krishna. And when Krishna hears that, and He speaks to them, then He says, Naparyeham, ultimately. He says, actually, I can't, even though I am unlimited in my unlimited qualities, your quality of love, your the intensity and purity of your surrendered love for me is so great, I have been defeated by it. And I cannot repay you. I am forever in your debt. And therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, when Krishna says that, he desires, even though he knows everything, he desires to know what they are experiencing in their love for him, and therefore at that point he makes the determination to advent to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants to taste that. So this, going back to what we were talking about, is that what is the limit in relationship with the unlimited? This is it. Is that love of Krishna, it actually is so powerful, and it can be developed to such a degree of intimacy, that it actually defeats the unlimited, unconquerable Supreme Personality of Godhead and places them forever in His debt, in their debt. This is the limit, and this is what Mahaprabhu came to give. And this is what the Upanishads, in the most direct portions, hint at. This is what the Bhagavatam is about. This is what we actually read perhaps months ago. We're reading about Krishna's dealings with His most trusted, intimate, loving devotees in Braja, in Vrindavan. So therefore, if one actually deeply understands these things, meditating on these instructions, it will burn up all one's material desires, because one sees those as the greatest enemy. The materialists want to fan their material desires and satisfy the material desires and exploit the material desires of others so that they get power, so that they get money, so that they can enjoy what their material desires. But Bhagavad Gita says these material desires, they burn like fire. They cannot be satisfied. What chapter, Bhagavad Gita?
3rd chapter, last section, last.
Have you been teaching this also? Huh? That's something wonderful about teaching, by the way. Everyone should teach. Learn and teach Shastra. It's very good. We should study and teach. So it burns, these material desires are burnt when we actually deeply meditate on the instructions that are given. Because we see that if I follow my material desires, even though I have a tendency and naturally the motive passion pushes me and whips me to satisfy my material desires, but actually it's going to cause me the greatest suffering, not the greatest happiness. And there are two levels of the suffering. We read this before. One level is that I suffer, and the second level is it keeps me from what is actually good for me. And that's my relationship with Krishna. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? So if somehow or another, even though the nature of the material world, the nature of Maya, is to engage us, to make us forget the Shastric direction of life and engage us in so many other things, if we sometimes, sometimes by the grace of Prabhupada and the devotees and Gwanatai and Radhabalava and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, if we sometimes get a glimpse, this is actually really what I want, even though most of the time there's so much smoke and fog covering my consciousness, but this is actually what I want, then we should very quickly take that to the deities, take those prayers to the deities and offer them with devotion and humble submission to them. Offer ourselves to them. Please, somehow engage me. I know I'm not very qualified, and right now, maybe I'm feeling more clear consciousness than usual, maybe. Then, but please, take this. Take me. Let me be yours. Please accept me as your servant. Please accept me. Please write my name down in your book. Any questions? If not, we'll stop. Yes.
You were saying that things that are very dear to us are very private, that we have like some real intensity of love for, that we don't talk openly about them. In the Jewish faith, they don't say the names of God, or I'm not sure if they know them, but they
don't intone them, they don't speak them. Yes. So that was sort of a comment in the form of a question?
Yeah.
Okay. So that actually comes up with in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that not in the relationship to the Jewish religion, but Balavabhata says to Mahaprabhu that every living entity, every soul, ultimately, Krishna is like the husband of every soul. And in speaking in the Vedic culture, the husband the wife never speaks the name of her husband. This is old culture. Not in contemporary culture. Very so respectful. Just like when you talk to your parents, what do you call your father and mother? What do you call your father? Danny, what do you call your father? Yeah. What do you call your father? What do you call your father?
Mama.
So no one calls their father by their name or mother by their name, although sometimes in contemporary people do that. They don't call them by their name. So in the traditional way, the wives, they would not call their husband by their name even, because it's a matter of respect. It would be considered disrespectful. So that was his argument. So a wife doesn't call the husband by their name, and every living entity is the wife of Krishna. So therefore, why do you tell everyone to chant Krishna's names? That was the argument. And Mahaprabhu said, you don't understand. The first order, the first most important duty of a wife is to follow the instructions of the husband. And then he quoted so many instructions. And the instruction of the husband of Krishna is always chant my names. So that's the first duty, is to always chant. So there's something true in that respect, but if one becomes fanatical about something that one doesn't understand on the deepest level, then one doesn't do well, doesn't get the ultimate benefit. So, and even in the Bhagavatam, actually it's not in, I think it's in Vishnu Purana, the gopis were always chanting the name of Krishna. They were always chanting, especially in the most intense, deep moments of love for him. They were chanting. When Krishna was leaving Vrindavan on the chariot of Akura, the Braja Gopis, they were saying, you know what, it's right in the Bhagavatam, there's one line that they said. You have to get out the harmonium for this one. Okay? Ready? This is what they were singing. Go, the harmonium. That's the one underneath the book. Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. Govinda Damodara Madhaveti.
Govinda Damodara Madhaveti.
Of Mahaprabhu, we chant the holy names of Krishna, begging him, asking him, like a baby crying for mother, please engage me in your service. It is the essence of all prayer, it is the essence of the all Shastra, and it's the essence of the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay, let's stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Nithai Gaur Radhabalava Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.